gorgeous, graceful birds. I was out canoeing last weekend, and if you're in a canoe and you come, you know, you're paddling along the bank and there's a gray blue heron on the bank, it'll often fly, but it rarely flies directly at you and then behind you.
Mm.
It flies up the bank. And so as you continue paddling up the bank, it sees you and then it flies ahead. And we chased this blue heron, you know, inadvertently. We were just going our way and it kept flying away from us. Probably a quarter mile, half mile. It's just a gorgeous bird. And it kept making that sound, which is why I chose it for this week.
I bet you didn't hate that.
Didn't hate that at all.
It's the Season Watch pod. We're so excited about spring edition. Maybe not as excited about how warm it's been. I'm Heidi Holton.
This is Charlie Mitchell.
And we've got some great stuff lined up to talk about birds, about... Actually, this is pretty exciting because the rare sighting of Charlie in front of me.
Hey, I'm in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, Charlie is here. We have the day we're recording, we have our Kick It with KEXE. It is so much more, you've been to these before,
yes,
now, than a meeting. An annual mm-hmm. meeting does not fully describe it.
No, so, it does not.
Yeah.
It is a party, it is a concert, and it's just a joy to be around like all of my coworkers and also this community.
Yeah.
Just full of wonderful people who make me laugh all the time. It's great.
Even for introverts, people understand, yes, introverts here. They don't really care if you need to take a moment. I was saying that uh-huh. our team, the morning show team and the Phenology team, is a little probably more introverted than most of the teams.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I remember last year I like ducked away for 20 minutes and just walked down to the Mississippi and put on Merlin, and it clocked 17 bird species in like a minute. It was amazing.
It is so fun right now to have that resource in front mm-hmm. of you, you know, and I mean, I don't want to give up on bird books. Bird books are great and everyone should support the people who make bird books. Uh-huh. But holy cow, Merlin is just something else. You want to know more about it? Although Merlin has that information too.
But there's nothing that'll replace a good bird
no,
book.
No, there is not.
Yep.
But I mean for like mm-hmm. a more of a newbie like me. But we yeah. have bird books sitting around in our house and mm-hmm. something we like to look at. And
I remember as a kid, even like before I could read and definitely before I was like interested in reading a bird book, I still loved looking through them.
Mm-hmm.
Like illustrations of all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandma had a book, now that you say that, that I would just look at, and I couldn't read yet, but I would copy the words down,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I could tell what it was. And mm-hmm. so I was like probably teaching myself a little bit how to read.
Yeah.
And then I would move on to the very scintillating encyclopedia.
Ooh.
And copy words from there.
I miss the encyclopedia.
Yeah. They also, here I do some... I use old books to make other things, and it's sort of this random thing. I have someone who randomly gives me the insides of books, old mm-hmm. books, because they make things out of the covers of books. I don't even know them very well, but I just randomly okay. get these. So I don't know what it's going to be. And one of them I got is an old dictionary, and the illustrations of the birds in that mm. are amazing. And it's a little dictionary, so it's a tiny little black and white drawings in the dictionary that are just fantastic.
That's so cool. And what a like great way to reduce, reuse, recycle yeah. books.
I mean,
someone's taking the covers, you're taking the pages.
Yeah. I mean, I don't always know mm-hmm. what I'm making with them or what I'm doing, but it's something to, you know, if you can't sit out and use your Merlin app or mm-hmm. be around nature, it's good to keep your hands busy and just, you know, that's what nature does for us too.
Absolutely.
What's it like to be sitting here looking out at this time of year on
oh,
the
man.
Banks of the Mississippi? I realize if you look that way, I can actually still see the water. Last week I proclaimed I can't see the water anymore.
Yeah, but you do need to, you know, move a little bit to be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
In driving up here from my area in Stillwater, I feel like I rewound like at least 3 weeks of time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's only two, but it's, you know, how spring happens fast.
Yeah.
But all the fruit trees are flowering. They're completely done where I am.
Oh, yeah. Lilacs just started blooming here.
They're pretty much done.
Hmm.
Yeah, walking down my driveway right now, it looks like deep summer.
Hmm.
It's completely leafed out. You know, the ferns and everything are all unfurled. Like the little ground creepers, the thicket creepers are all completely leafed out.
Yeah.
It's all green. And here, it's very green. But, yeah, the leaves aren't max size yet.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, very different.
the new green is here, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The lilacs, earlier this week when we were talking to the early bird fishing guide, for him, that means the panfish are moving in when the lilacs bloom here. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's when the first dragonfly shows up. That's when the sunnies are biting. That's what my dad would tell me, you know? Uh-huh. So, and not that it's always true, but it's that time of year and it lines up. That's phenology too.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you put plants in the ground and
There we go. Well, you know, we're winding down the school year. I don't even know if will we have any student reports next week?
We'll have a few next week.
Okay.
But
it's hard.
Not as much.
Yep. And that this is our moment to grovel, that we need reports from you.
Yes, please.
Yes. Whether you're a kid or an adult, you know, we get a lot of texts that come in, all of that kind of stuff. But you've chosen for us this week our good friends at Little Falls Middle School.
Middle school, yep.
Let's take a listen.
This is Emily.
And Megan reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of May 24th.
The lilac flowers are starting to bloom, and we are keeping an eye on the plants that also made flowers last fall during the warm snap to see if they still produce flowers this spring.
We have seen cormorants flying near lakes or perched on branches overlooking the water.
This past week, we have had scarlet tanagers showing up everywhere. We don't remember ever seeing so many of them.
We've had a couple of observations of bats that are up and flying around.
A classmate found a red-bellied snake out sunning itself.
There were large pillar-like swarms of small insects. We are guessing a type of gnats. They look like little tornadoes of bugs.
We had a sighting of an orchard oriole feeding on grape jelly along with the Baltimore Orioles.
There were multiple kestrel sightings on power lines overlooking fields.
The painted turtles are being found away from ponds as they are looking for a place to lay their eggs. We did learn about the unique way that the sex of the new turtles is determined by the temp they are incubated at.
We have been finding jack-in-the-pulpits in the woods and learned how to identify if they are male or female based on the number of leaves they have.
Another brand new bird for us, a lark sparrow, became our 121st bird in our year-long bird count.
Classmates tried some fiddleheads and were not impressed. We are guessing that not all species are equal when it comes to eating.
Mr. Ballou has a family of great horned owls by his house, and he has spotted three owlets peeking out at him from their tree, with the parent perched nearby.
That is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
I love the idea of three little owlets peeking out for their nest.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you've heard owlets. Have you seen?
No, okay. I've never seen owlets.
The little barred owlets, once they fledge, they kind of hang out high in the trees and call for their parents to feed them. They make this little sneezy sound, which you will hear at dusk and dawn and sometimes during the day. But yeah, it's always fun to hear them. And once you hear them, then you can start looking, sometimes find them if you're very lucky.
Right.
But
as I was falling asleep, because it's, you know, we still got the windows wide open and stuff, the toads were a little overpowering. But I think I heard an owl. There's sometimes an owl that hangs out. Yeah. But I was just on the edge of sleep. So it was just like, otherwise I would normally kind of quietly go on the deck and see if I could see it. But yeah, I think it's back, or you know. Yeah.
Yep.
And it must be a barred owl probably, right?
Is it the who cooks for you? Who cooks for you?
It was just a barely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll have to see.
Okay. Might have been a great horn too.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're tying all this to, it's not just Tuesdays, it's not just Season Watch where we talk about nature, because of course here we sit in the midst of nature as if we are outside ourselves, right? Remember when I told you the origin story?
Yes, I do.
The station, and that this was all intentional. And we had a guest on the morning show today who went, she was like, this building is nothing like what it looks like outside. It's inspiring. And, you know, just like couldn't believe it. And it was a lot of fun. It's nice to see your place through other people's eyes.
Absolutely. Man, a skylight will change a building so much, and let alone however many I see here, five. Yeah.
And this one, you know the story here on this one in here?
The mural?
Yeah.
Tell me again.
Well, it's to have art here, of course, but the idea is for us to remember from broadcasting that we are not just broadcasting to Grand Rapids. It is a map of our region.
Yep.
And so wherever you might be sitting, you're going to see different towns. Like I'm seeing Hibbing and Babbitt and Ely on mine.
Yep, and I'm seeing Effie and Big Fort and Marcel, Winnebagoches.
Yeah.
Normally I'm in that seat because John Latimer is in the seat I'm in
now. How's it feel?
Whole new, Whole new perspective. Yep. I wanted to also point out with the Little Falls report, they were talking about the painted turtles and how they're coming up from ponds and rivers to lay their eggs. They'd mentioned one of the things that I studied in grad school, which is temperature-dependent sex determination. It's where, of course, rolls off the tongue so easily. But it's where, depending on whether they lay their eggs in a sunny spot or in a shady spot, the temperature of the nest will determine whether the eggs are male or female.
Really?
So it's not by chromosome. It's by the incubating temperature.
Wow.
And this is true for a lot of different reptiles, although sometimes it's flopped where if it's a shady spot, it's female, and if it's a hot spot, it's male. It can flop. But it's such a fascinating way to determine sex that, like, painted turtles will do. In graduate school, we were a part of this long-term ecological research program that was funded by the National Science Foundation, which I'm sure most of those have been defunded, but we were looking at whether the turtles were able to notice climate change and adjust where they nested in order to compensate. Because if they continue to nest as they do, because a hot nest produces only females, you would be theoretically overrun with only female turtles, with only very rare male ones for painted turtles. But I just thought it was fascinating, and I'm so happy to hear the Little Falls students mention it.
You know, that's funny because another thing we talked about on the morning show this week, Jennifer had a chance to talk to Marshall Helmberger, the editor of the Timberjay newspaper, and she said his story was about tanagers and that they were seeing tanagers they never see in that region. He has great photos at timberjay.com about it, and he's talking there about...
It's a hybrid between a western tanager, which we get in Minnesota, but very, very rarely, and then the scarlet tanager, which we get every year, but a hybrid between the two, fascinating.
So the reason I was thinking of it is because I asked Jennifer, I'm like, well, why is that? Is that climate? That it's different? They're choosing different spots? And, you know, I had a bunch of questions about that because I was a little curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't have answers for you, but I'll join you in being curious.
There we go.
Yeah. So yeah, they found a western scarlet tanager hybrid.
Wow.
As well as a male western tanager, both an adult, like a full male one, and then a first-year male summer tanager. So, yeah, for some reason, the Little Fork and the tanagers are just overrun this year. Yeah, so I pulled up Marshall's article here on the Timberjay, timberjay.com, if you want to read it. And he mentions there, as I mentioned at the outset, migration season can send us the occasional curveball, but we wouldn't know about it if it weren't for the legions of dedicated birders out there on a regular basis, keeping tabs on all these comings and goings. In fact, it's all those birders out there year after year, binoculars in hand, or Merlin or eBird on their phones these days, that have been able to tell us where birds should properly be found. Birds, after all, don't provide we humans with carefully drawn maps of their normal ranges. We rely on serious birders or ornithologists to draw those lines.
Cool.
Yep.
Those photos are just amazing. The one of the first-year male summer tanager.
Mm-hmm. Looking all fluffy.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
Bedraggled.
We'd love to hear from you. What are you seeing? You can text into 218-326-1234 or leave a SpeakPipe message because we love hearing your voice, hearing what you have seen. We got a couple this morning. We heard from someone who said, just watched a monarch butterfly, Danaeus plexippus, soar through to a blossoming chokecherry.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
The monarchs are back. And actually, John Latimer talked about it on his report this week.
And we were just talking about the monarch butterfly and how there have been a couple of sightings in the area. Typically, my average first sighting is the 30th of May. The interesting thing about monarchs, and as I described it, you know, this is the second generation. So last fall, the monarchs left Minnesota and they flew all the way to Mexico and they spent the winter up at an altitude, not doing much. They find a spot where the temperature is close to their, I guess it would be, what is that called? Diapause, where they sort of go into torpor or hibernation. And they remain pretty still for most of the winter, conserving their energy. And then in the spring, they fly north. They don't make it all the way to Minnesota. Somewhere along the way, they stop. They lay their eggs on emerging milkweed plants. And those are the butterflies that then continue the migration to Minnesota. And oddly enough, they arrive here from migration, from this process that I've explained, and at the same time, and this is 40-some years of records, at the same time, we should begin to see the Canada tiger swallowtail, or just the tiger swallowtail, but up this far north, typically most of them are Canada tiger swallowtails, and their average first appearance is the 26th, so usually I see the Canada tiger swallowtail first and then the monarch. But to be honest with you, over the years, when I see one, I look for the other. Now, the monarch is a 3-inch wide orange and black butterfly that is pretty spectacular and pretty easily identified. And the Canada or the tiger swallowtail is the same, except that it is yellow and black. And it is also easily identified and also 3 inches in width, wingtip to wingtip. So that one emerges from a cocoon. So the Canada tiger swallowtail emerges from a cocoon almost simultaneous with the arrival of the monarch. I see one, I'm looking for the other. So if you've seen a monarch, start looking for the tiger swallowtail. If you see a tiger swallowtail, start looking for monarchs. They're going to be hand in hand, even though one is flying in from the south and one is just emerging from a cocoon.
One of the things I love about, you know, phenology and butterflies is how aware you have to be to notice the first butterfly, or like, especially, you know, the first monarch butterfly or swallowtail. You got your mind on the grocery list or all the things you haven't done at work, which is often on my mind. You know, they'll flip by you and you won't really see them. I saw 3 monarchs on my drive up here.
Really?
Yep.
As you were driving, you could see them?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Big orange butterflies, but I don't think there are any other big orange butterflies out right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think of like driving that you'd really be able to see them. Like you'd have to be sort of still somehow, but.
Yeah. No, you can spot them. Often, you know, going dangerously close to the front of your car, but I don't think I hit any, so that's good. That would make me sad.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor dragonflies, though. It always makes me sad to hit a dragonfly.
Mm.
They're so speedy, but I think they're also more risk takers than some of the other ones.
Yeah, that's right. I made a promise. I got to study up. I was going to learn at least one kind of dragonfly, other than than just dragonfly is what I need to learn, right?
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to work on that.
Easy peasy. You got it.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can do that. Yeah. It's an exciting time of year. And John and I got talking this week about something else that I think, I guess I'm not sure. Do you like toads?
Oh, Charlie? I love a toad. Oh, they're so cute. They just look like such cranky old men.
It's kind of true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Should we take a listen?
Yes, please.
Our text line is a great way to let us know what changes you are seeing. 218-326-1234. John, if I was just listening today, this is what I would text in to you. That's not me snoring last night.
No.
Practically, though, it was the call, you know, the windows open, could hear these toads, the loons calling.
Yeah, the American toad is really getting his singing in. I was I was outside yesterday, and my hearing isn't all that it should be. It isn't all that it was. I guess it is what it should be because I've abused my ears over the years with lots of things. But I could hear the toads down by the lake, and then later on yesterday I walked down to the lake to get some information from the lake. How's the water doing, whether the loon had made a nest or not, what the trumpeter swans were up to, all of those things. But along the way, when I got to the lake, the toads were just raising a ruckus. It was hard to hear anything else. They were really, really singing hard. I heard some other frogs out for a hike the other day. I heard some leopard frogs and some tree frogs. So there are still a few frogs singing. As dry as it's been, the seasonal ponds are really hardly available for all of these critters, the toads, the frogs, the salamanders. They all depend on these seasonal ponds, and they are having a hard time finding them. At my house, I can walk out into the swamp, which would have been a swamp. Right now, it's just a dry, grassy mat. There's a tiny bit of squishiness down at the bottom, but boy, it is really, really dry.
It is dry.
Yeah, it is so dry. I feel so bad for all the little eggs that probably didn't make it.
So the sound that we're hearing, it feels very loud of the toads. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously a chorus, right? So it is a lot. Do we have any idea of knowing how many make that kind of sound?
So an individual toad will be able to call like that from anywhere. I of course don't have my guidebooks with me. I think it's between 10 to 60 seconds. Between 6 to 30 seconds. But it's a long, loud call.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive. And it takes, I think, they use 5 times the amount of energy that they normally do when calling. So it's really expensive behavior if you think about their energetics. But yeah, that's that one trill is one toad, and then you'll hear another one kind of overlapping with it, and another one kind of overlapping with it. Yeah, and got some lungs on them.
They're calling to each other?
Yeah, so those are all male toads that you're hearing.
Okay.
Calling for females.
Okay.
And exactly what the toad... Exactly what a female toad finds sexy was a question I had earlier this year that I tried to find, and it was interesting that the answer was kind of they don't quite know. It seems to be related to body length. Bigger toads are sexier, but it also has to do with the duration of the call, the pitch of the call, and then how fast those trills are.
Wow.
So if you're singing, it's different from.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, John mentioned that I've got some sound effects in front of me that I thought you might like to hear. Do we play a quiz here? Will you know them?
Ooh, yes. Let's try. Let's find out. Got a spring peeper. What I would guess.
Yeah, it says here that there's
kind of
two.
Snoring. There. So leopard frog?
That's what we have. Okay. That's what we say that the thing is.
I think of the leopard frog. Leopard is a cat. Cats love to sleep. Mm. Leopard frog sounds like it's snoring.
Okay, so that was that lower sound.
Kind of
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay, here's another for you.
Wood frog?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The way you remember that one, you got a wood frog. You also have a wood duck. The wood frog sounds kind of like it's quacking.
Oh, sure. Okay, here we go. Another one for you.
Chorus frog.
It's not what I have, but...
Oh, and a green frog.
Okay.
Okay, I only heard one green frog in there, but it was that sound kind of like a loose banjo, a little plunk plunk.
Okay, it says here gray tree frog for that one.
Oh, yeah, duh, yep, that's better.
This is what I have for the green frog. There we go. Dun, 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 dun.
Yep.
No wonder Kermit played the banjo, huh?
I missed the tree frog.
It's okay. You didn't know. I just am throwing this at you. You're doing a great job. Right? This is, I feel like things are coming together for me.
Kermit the Green Frog. Yeah. Playing the banjo.
Good old
blunk,
Kermit.
Blunk, blunk, blunk.
It's not easy being green, you know.
Yeah, we probably won't hear those for another week or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then maybe longer for us.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think we've been very good and curious about what is going on in the world right now. Here's an important thing is we really do want to hear from you.
Yes, we really do.
Yeah.
Please let us know what you're finding. If you have questions, I love to do, you know, a quick deep dive into some question of the week. Like, I love that one about the black flies a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fun to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
So let me know. Yeah. Keep you posted.
We want to thank the contributors this week.
Yes, we had the Great Blue Heron call was from Michael Herbin. And then the, do you remember where we got the toad calls from?
No, I don't know. Okay. Those come out of our system and I don't know where they came from.
Perfect. Thank you, yes. System.
And actually, probably that's thanks to Scott Hall. He put those in,
okay.
In there and probably at the behest of Harry Hutchins. So
yep.
Thanks to both of them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, our John Latimer, our phenologist, and we'd like to thank also the people behind this. That means our listener members. We're going to end today
with the great blue heron, just a little reminder of what that dinosaur bird sounds like.
Support for Season Watch Podcast comes from the Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas, with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.